The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, March 18th, 2024.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She does everything you do because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. With me at the board is my friend, my partner, my engineer, and co-producer. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Elaine, and happy birthday to you.
Oh, thank you so much, Ken. Yes, today's my birthday, number 84. Oh, my God, I can't believe it, 84 years old. Well, you know, I am a mother, a grandmother, a great-grandmother, a partner, a friend, all the things that come along with age, I guess. It's just amazing that I have made it this long, and I am forever grateful. Well, you know, it's National Women's History Month, and for this show this morning, joining me on the phone will be Dr. Harriet Fraud. Dr. Fraud is a regular here on Women's Spaces. I love having her on. She is a mental health counselor and hypnotherapist in practice in New York City. She is a well-published author and writes about the pressures on families and the economics of the United States of America. She's also a regular guest of Dr. Richard Wolf and his show Economic Update, and we are lucky to have it on KBBF 89.1 every Tuesday from 11 to 12 p.m. And, you know, I'm going to do something a little bit different. You know, this is International Women's History Month, and at the beginning of the month, I had Molly McGregor, one of the co-founders of the History Project here in Sonoma County, which I'm very proud to know. And then last week, we had wonderful, wonderful women in radio, which was kind of exciting. I really enjoyed that, you know, how far we've come as far as having a voice. But, you know, I thought I would do something a little bit different, you know. We talk about them every Mother's Day. I talk about the Mother's Day proclamation. And, you know, this is really a part of history that we really need to know a little bit more about. You know, it's not talked about very much. You know, Mother's Day has become a day where we honor our mothers, which I have no objection to that, with flowers and candies and brunches and all those wonderful things. I certainly enjoy having it. But when we start looking at the world today and what's going on, so many wars, you know, and when I got the idea for doing this show, I start thinking about how long have women been protesting war? You know, how long have they been calling for peace? And, you know, there was a play, a very famous play called La Estrada. It was the third and final of the peace plays written by a Greek comic playwright, Aristophanes, in 445 B.C. 445 years before Christ, women were calling for peace. And they were actually going to deny sexuality to men. It was during the years between the Athens and Spartacus wars. Can you believe that? 445 BC, that's how long we've been calling for peace. And then here we go up hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years later in the 1800s when Julia Ward Howe came across and she wrote the Mother's Day Proclamation, which was a call. You know, one of the lines I love one of the lines is that I will not raise my son to kill another mother's son in the proclamation. And that was the whole idea. And how really went all across the United States preaching about different peace. In fact, she did a published in 1870 appeal to womanhood throughout the world, and it was a call for an international conference of women on the subject of peace. And in 1871, she became the first president of the American branch of the Women's International Peace Association. And this was all the way here. We're talking about 1870. And here we are in 2024. And I'm having my 84th birthday. And since the day I opened my eyes on this planet in 1940, we've been at war. You know, and I remember my mother talking about that when I was a teenager, saying, my God, are we ever going to have peace on this planet? I mean, then we went into Vietnam and this every one war after another. And now look what's happening in Israel and in Gaza. I mean, it's so shameful when you start thinking about it. I mean, here we have technology that we can communicate with each other all over the world, and we still can't have peace. So I invited Dr. Fraud on to talk about the Women's Day Proclamation and talk about how women have been struggling for peace, you know, how they've unionized, how they've spoke out, how they've struck. You know, I mean, it was hard enough for us to get the vote, let alone have peace on earth. My goodness. I mean, when you look at 1870, when Julia Howe was, how she wrote the proclamation was, it was after the Civil War, and a group of women who were very peace activists decided to go and visit some of the troops in the hospitals. And when they got to the hospitals, they found all kinds of carnage, all kinds of legs and arms and fingers and everything in these baskets. And she says, my God, when are we going to have peace? And then all of a sudden, the idea of this is one mother's child killing another mother's child, it was just an amazing thought. And she did write the Mother's Day Proclamation and did all kinds of ways of trying to bring peace to the planet. And before you know it, another woman took over and wanted to make Mother's Day in another way. And then another woman took over. And before you know it, here we are in the 2024. Mother's Day will be in May. And what we do is we don't talk about ending war. We talk about getting flowers, having a brunch, and all that other stuff. So I thought it was very important that maybe we talk a little bit about this. And, you know, it's really interesting being 84 years old, you know, and looking at the world the way it is, especially when I look at my two great-grandchildren. It's amazing. I say to myself, what is the world going to be like for them if we continue the way we are? Well, you know, I just wanted to give you a little background. It's very interesting. Today's March 18th, and yesterday was March 17th, which was St. Patrick's Day. And I'll just tell you a little funny story about me. My mother found out very early she was going to have a cesarean. And what she told me was, because I asked her, I said, Mom, that was really interesting. I was almost born on St. Patrick's Day. And she says, well, when the doctor told me I was going to have the cesarean on March 17th, I said, uh-uh, no way. My daughter's not going to be born on St. Patrick's Day. So she scheduled the cesarean for March 18th. And here I am, 84 years later. And in fact, it's 11:56 right now. Now, I'm an hour old. I was born at 10:30. But with the irony and what's so much fun about this birthday, this March 17th versus March 18th, is my neighbor, Harold Rogers, lives across the street from me. Happy birthday, Harold. He celebrates his birthday on March 17th. Which is very amazing. So I call him Brother Fish. And then I have so many different people that are born in March. My dear friend, Mary Norman, I want to say happy to her. And just, it's all just hung. And Lee Pierce, who was the former vice mayor of Santa Rosa, his birthday is in March. So happy birthday, Lee. We always wish each other and we call each other Sister and Brother Fish. It's just amazing. So happy birthday to all you Pisces out there. Actually, this is the year of the dragon. I feel my dragon coming out. So it's really kind of fun. And I want to thank everybody that's wishing me a happy new year, a happy birthday on Facebook. It really feels good. I mean, I can't believe some of the funny faces and some of the funny little cartoons that people put up. And once again, it brings attention to our media that we can communicate with each other. And I don't know why we don't find a path to peace. I mean, to me, it sounds simple. You know, just put down your arms. Let's sit down. Let's talk. You know, we're supposed to be stewards of the earth. Let's start taking care of each other. Let's start taking care of the earth. But to get there, it just seems like it's a long haul. But there are many, many people out there that are supporting it, that are out there protesting, and I want to thank all of them for being aware and being conscious. Well, you know, I have one announcement, and that's tonight. I'm not going to be able to be there. I'm really sorry. I'm going to be celebrating my birthday with my family. But it's the Sonoma County chapter of the National Organization for Women will be having their meeting tonight, and they're very blessed. We're going to have a wonderful, wonderful guest speaker, and that's Kirsten Lang, who is the chair of the NAACP, Sonoma County chapter, and she has just done a wonderful, wonderful job. I mean, there's a true woman pioneer building up the NAACP here in Sonoma County, so congratulations, Kirsten. And if folks want to find out about how to go get to the Zoom, it's a Zoom. All you have to do is go to go to the website of NOW, which is nowsonomacounty.org. Now Sonoma. It's not Now Sonoma County. Okay. NowSonoma.org. And you'll go on to our their website, and they have all the Zoom information on there. And I believe it starts at 6 o'clock tonight. And Kirsten is a wonderful, wonderful speaker. It's starting at 7. Thank you, Ken. Starting at 7. Ken does our website, so I need to read it every once in a while, Ken, to make sure that I have all these times right. So that's going to be on NowSonoma.org. Go ahead. You look on. They'll have all the information about the Zoom, all the different ways that you can get in the password and the ID. So that should be really, really exciting tonight to have that presentation by Kirsten. And you know, the NAACP is very, very, very active, and there's a lot of stuff going on in the county around racism and around a lot of the things that young people are going through that they're very involved with, and I know folks will want to hear that this evening. Well, like we do every Monday, we do our history as our strength. And today is March 18th, 2024. And like I said, it's my birthday. And here we have on March 18th, 1970, she was born. And that's Queen Latifah. In fact, if anybody out there knows how to get hold of Queen Latifah, please, please email me at elainebholds@gmail.com. Why? Well, first of all, let me just tell you a little bit about her. She's New Jersey-born African-American whose real name is, I cannot believe it, Dana Elaine. So that's her middle name, Owens, and here she is, born March 18th. So I'd love to have her on the show. And she's witnessed her parents' divorce at a tender age, and then she went on, was 22. Her older brother was killed in an automobile accident. She's had so many challenges in her life, and look at her today, just beautiful, and calls herself Queen Latifah. And I'm really proud. I'm glad that her and I are born the same day, although it's quite a few years apart. I mean, she was born in 1970. I'm 30 years older than her. But I want to wish her a happy birthday. Happy birthday, Queen Latifah. And I'm really honored that we both share the name Elaine. And by the way, if you're listening or any of your friends, tell Queen Latifah that Elaine means light. And she definitely is the light, a light that comes through to many, many of us. Well, another birthday we had I thought was really interesting. And this was the first woman to serve on a straight, on the state Supreme Court, and one of the first women to serve as a United States federal judge, and that was Florence Ellenwood, and she was born March 23rd, 1884. Wow, 1884, made her transition in 1966, and she was able to serve as a United States federal judge. What an accomplishment for that woman. And another woman I think is very, very interesting, too. She was born on March 23rd, also in 1897, made her transition in 1984, and that was Margaret Farrar. She joined the New York World in 1921 with responsibility. Oh, this is what it was, a magazine to get crossword puzzle mistake-free. Can you believe a woman was responsible for all these crossword puzzles that we have in the paper? And she was the first person to actually edit a crossword book, and also she became the crossword editor for the New York Times in 1942. Now, if we didn't know, I mean, here we work on crosswords people. I know Ken's dad, Don, was really big on crosswords, and here it was a woman that developed it and took care of it and made sure that the crosswords that were in the papers were actually correct. Amazing. All these different things that women done that we really don't know. Well, another woman that I think, this is another woman that was interesting to me, March 23rd, 1905, that's when she was born, and she made her transition in 1977, and that was actress Joan Crawford. She was amazing. I mean, you know, these women, Joan Crawford and Barbara Stanwyck, those women in the 30s and the 40s, they were really the first to be on the stage, to be on talkies, and to do all kinds of very interesting things in the movies. She played in 1928. That's when she had her first assignment, or her first debut, I guess, on the film Charleston and Our Dancing Daughters. That was her first film. I thought that was really interesting. I looked that up, and it wasn't even really a sound. It was kind of just, it was all these young women dancing. It was just amazing. I couldn't believe how beautiful Joan Crawford looked. And Joan, one of the things that reminds me of her was she always wanted to be, she always said she was a queen bee. And I always thought that was very interesting. She had that tenacity and that kind of that attitude, you know. And happy birthday to her. And she made her transition in 1977. And she ended up being the head of a corporation. I believe it was a Pepsi Cola. I mean, not that I think it's a big deal for a woman to be a head of, you know, all that sugar and that on those sodas. It's amazing. But she did, when her husband died, her last husband died, she became the executive for Pepsi-Cola. So I thought that was also amazing. Well, there's a lot to think about, lots of women who've made an impact. And right now we're going to take a little musical break. Can we take a little musical break, Ken?
Yeah.
And we're going to play For the Mothers. It's a song by Betsy Rose and the Women's Choir. And this song is meant to bring awareness of how mothers and children are suffering from wars and conflicts going on across the globe. And that's why I think it's so important that we address the Mother's Day Proclamation, calling for an end to war, calling for peace. And also there's another, there's a more modern rendition that the Code Pink, Women for Peace also made, that we are going to read and analyze. Well, let's go ahead and take a break, Ken, and when we return, I will be talking with Dr. Harriet Fraud, who is a mental health counselor and hypnotherapist in New York City. Dr. Fraud is also a regular guest on Women's Spaces and also on Richard Wolff's Economic Update. And she's very, 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 very involved. And I'm really looking forward to talking to her about the Mother's Day Proclamation. So let's go ahead and play the song, Ken, and we'll get Harriet on the phone.
I sing for the mothers all over the earth, for their power, for their love. I ache for the mothers all over the earth, for their sorrow, for their love. May their broken hearts be cradled, may their righteous anger be heard. I pray for justice and healing for all of the mothers I sing for the mothers of soldiers at war, for their power, for their love. I ache for the mothers of soldiers at war, for their sorrow, for their love. May their broken hearts be cradled, may their righteous anger be for justice and healing for all of the mothers all over the earth. I sing for the mothers who grieve for a child, for their power, for their love. I ache for the mothers who grieve for a child, sorrow, for
prison. Teenage mothers. For mothers with cancer.
For mothers in countries at war.
For mothers who cannot feed their children.
May their broken hearts be cradled. May their righteous anger be heard. I pray for justice and healing for all of the mothers all over the earth.
Oh, that song just makes me cry when I think, particularly when I think of some of the films that I've seen lately in Gaza and some of the destruction and seeing some of those mothers with their children in their arms that are dead. I mean, it just breaks my heart, and I just don't understand why we can't come to a place of peace. I don't know, maybe in the play, Leah Estrada was right. Just let the men go take a vacation somewhere, and maybe all the mothers gather and say, no more. No more killing of our children. No more wars. We want peace. We want light. We want love. We want good medical. We want good schools. On and on. I mean, I can go on and on. Well, for you just joining in, I want to remind my listeners the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of the station, its board of directors, its members, and Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I want to introduce my guest. Joining me on the phone all the way from New York, Dr. Harriet Fraud. Welcome, Dr. Fraud. Welcome to Women's Spaces.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Well, you know, I'm really excited, you know, that you and I, we've had several conversations about this show, and we're going to kind of move along and ad lib it and just have some fun. But before we do, I'd just like to tell folks a little bit about you. Is that okay, Harriet?
Sure.
Dr. Harriet Fraud is a mental health counselor and hypnotherapist in New York. She's a longtime political activist in initiating movements for better public education, free public child care, and midwifery rights in childbirth. She is a founding mother of the feminist movement. She has the podcast Capitalism Hits Home, and her regular radio show, Interpersonal Update, appears on WBAI on Tuesday night at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Her work focuses on the mutual shaping of political, economic, and personal life. She is also a regular guest with Dr. Richard Wolff's show, Economic Update, which plays every Tuesday here at 11 to 12 p.m. on KBBF. So welcome, Dr. Fraud. Welcome. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, that's just fine, so we can get into the meat of our talk.
Well, Harriet, we're celebrating Women's History Month. Talk about why you believe this is so important that women celebrate every year a whole month and talk about their history. How does it make us stronger? How do you see that as important?
Well, if we see that we've had a struggle from being chattel to being human, and that we still have a way to go, we'll be inspired by all of our sisters struggling, from the bondswomen, because 40% of women who came to the United States came as bondswomen. They came, their passage was exchanged for 7 years of labor as a wife, often as a wife. And they were arrested for trivial things, and then given the choice of jail or going to what the colonies then, the British colonies, and for 7 years they had to be a wife or a servant, overwhelmingly a wife. And so they were half slaves and struggled as bondswomen. And we've had a long, long history of struggle to be where we are now, and sometimes as the anti-abortion ruling of the Supreme Court recently reminded us, sometimes we slide backwards. I was in the original Fighters for Abortion Rights, which was a long struggle, and now we'll have to do it again, although we're much more conscious now and we'll fight longer and harder and more immediately. But there, everything we've gotten from struggle, and we have to remember that, and our history tells us that and inspires us with its victories.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you talk about the long fight with abortion. I remember I had my little girl with me. I think she was about 3 years old. And we were marching, and someone threw a canister with a fetus in it. And I remember I was just shocked. And I was there because it was very interesting, because I had an aunt. My aunt had to have an abortion. She had three children, and her husband had a mental breakdown and found herself pregnant. And she had to go to a backdoor abortion. And, oh, my God, we almost lost her. And yes. I was there marching with my daughter saying, no, this is not going to happen. God forbid if she needs an abortion or any child or any woman, you know, this is not acceptable to me. And here we are 2024 and we're fighting for our lives to get back our rights again. So I think it's very interesting. But, in doing this show, in doing the research, you know, I went all the way back to 445 B.C. when they wrote the play Leostrata, when the Greeks were fighting a war that the women wanted stopped, and they were going to deny them sex. And then here we talked about the Mother's Day Proclamation, which came up in 1870, and that was all over a war and what the women discovered about war and how horrific it was. And then we have the new proclamation that was written by Code Pink that we're going to talk about. So what do you think about that? Why do you think of what as a psychotherapist and as someone who's been like you were very, very early in the feminist movement, what do you think it is that why have women been treated this way? I mean, what is the mission of men that they seem to want to put us in a place where we don't have choices?
Well, the theory to which I subscribe, which has been described first by Engels and elaborated by Evelyn Reed and many, many others, is that there were communal societies where women were valued and equal, sort of like the society of the Iroquois before the colonists, the British and others, landed, where women's labor was appreciated, where children were associated with the mother and the maternal uncle, where everyone in the tribe took care of, was responsible for the future of the tribe and the children, and where if a woman wanted to get divorced, she just put her husband's belongings outside the tent, and that was it. And there was an appreciation of women and men as equal. And there's a quotation of a Jesuit priest who came to, quote, civilize the Native Americans, who said to a male Native American, you better keep an eye on your wife. You have no idea who your children are. And the Native American man said, yes, I do. They're all my children. A different approach, you know? And I think that's to illustrate that it started with private property, with the origin of private property rather than communal property, where men, who by that time understood where children came from, wanted their heirs to inherit property from them, and they didn't want to share that property. And those inheritance laws still exist. And I think that was the beginning of the end for communal, collective child rearing and personhood. And an illustration is that when women and children were captured by the Native Americans to replace those who had been killed by the settlers, when they came to rescue those women and children and bring them back to the Pilgrim Puritan culture, they refused. There's a book about called White Indians in North America, where they said, oh no, because they were treated as, with respect and as equals.
Oh, that is so interesting. So they didn't want to go back because they you know, it reminds me when they were writing or coming together and writing the Declaration of Independence, actually, and the Constitution itself. They had actually Benjamin Franklin, historically, according to history, invited the Iroquois to a meeting. And guess what the first thing they said? Where's the women?
I bet.
Where's the women? You know, and you know, when you know, today's my birthday. I'm 84. You know,
yay.
Yeah. If we, we're kind of you're a little bit younger than me, but we're kind of in the same age group. We would have been on the women's council. We would have been deciding whether there was going to be wars or not.
That's right.
You know,
and we were deciding against the war in Vietnam.
And what's so interesting, when I don't even mention that, because when I think of Robert McNamara coming out with that book that he says it was a mistake, I just want to scream. I mean, I don't even want to think about it. So I want to look at the Mother's Day Proclamation. There's two of them here, and I want to discuss them with you. And how does this fit in historically with today? And one of the things too that I have been really focused in on lately, I've been listening to a gentleman by the name of Gabor Mate. And I'm sure you're familiar with him. He was a Zionist in Israel, and who has become an advocate for peace. And one of the things he talks about is institutional drama. And when I'm thinking about wars, I'm thinking about when we go all the way back to 445 BC, you know, before Christ even, then we come into 1870 with Julia Howe, and then we come into the 2000 this century with Code Pink writing it. There's a lot of trauma, I would say, institutional trauma with women. And in the proclamation, the Mother's Day proclamation, I just want to read one line, and I'd like you to comment on this.
Sure.
Our sons shall not be taken from us to unlearn all that we have been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience. We women of one country will be too tender of those of another country to allow our sons to be trained to injure their sons. What does that say to you, and what does that say about institutional trauma?
Well, institutional trauma is huge. What it reminds me of is that in the wars in Vietnam, in Iraq, and in Afghanistan, all three, more soldiers killed themselves when they got home than were killed in battle. And it means that you are sending into your population a group of highly traumatized people. My son-in-law was in the Marines in a squadron, and he's only 46, but everyone else in the squadron is dead, mainly by suicide.
Ooh.
And that is institutional trauma, and it's an illustration of what you said about Julia Ward Howe, because, I mean, as someone who's dealt with little children, you teach children to share, you teach children to be kind to one another, and then you send them in to kill other people. There's a huge trauma involved, and people kill other people's children, and they kill people randomly just because they're scared, and they can't stand the trauma of suddenly turning into a death machine. And so that's what I think of.
Well, I was also thinking, when I think in terms of the Israeli and the Gaza war, you know, and how tight the Jewish people are holding on. You know, you've got all these different factions. You've got the peace faction, and then you got the ones that are, well, the Holocaust and all this other stuff that goes on. And in my mind, it feels like there's institutional drama, just working through this whole war, that all of a sudden, when you give those who have been traumatized, and not that I'm saying there's any excuse, there's no excuse for war, but you still have to look at those underlying concepts, those underlying principles that put people in these states. You know, I mean, you can understand how people are holding on. What is your thought on that? And in relation to what we're talking about, the women having the issues here in 445 BC, and then here in 1870, and then even today.
Well, what I think about is that there really was trauma in the Holocaust. I mean, 30 million Russians were killed fighting the Nazis, and at least 6 million, if you would count gay people, anyone with a disability. and gypsies were murdered. And you have trauma, but then you have war profiteers trying to harness it for their own agenda. And that's another thing, that Israel is very divided, and very divided against Netanyahu with his war proclamations, and also with his being guilty of stealing. And so they're harnessing that trauma to distract from Netanyahu's unpopularity. You know, it can be used. If you have raw pain, you can see it with Trump's voters, who are mainly men who feel that uppity women and black people have displaced them, as well as immigrants. And that's because they feel traumatized because they're no longer, you know, because of their race or because of their jobs, able to lord it over people. Women are less dependent. Black people and other people of color are trying to assert themselves as full human beings. And that's traumatic, and he can take advantage of it. And so this is a terrible thing, and Jews have been traumatized. World War II was a terrible thing. Russians were traumatized. 30 million, a whole generation of men, were killed. Okay, but that doesn't mean that they let their trauma be used to destroy other people. That's something that's terrible, and that's why so many Jews are involved in Jewish organizations against the genocide in Palestine, whether it's Jewish Voices for Peace, or Jews for a ceasefire, or whatever. You know, that it divides people. Some people feel, after a trauma, they feel extra compassionate for those who have been hurt like they have. And others want to reverse it and be the killers instead of the killed.
Well, you know, it's so interesting because when you think, you know, one of the things that is frightening these days, When you hear it, you hear people like Trump saying that they're going to be a dictator from one day, or they're going to do, you know, take away this entitlement and, you know, put women back where they belong in the kitchen. I mean, especially that rebuttal they had where they had the woman in the kitchen, like, hey, that's where we're supposed to be. You know, we're getting too loud. And then all of a sudden, when you start thinking about the institutionalized trauma and you see how the fears that they play on you, in other words, that they keep bringing up if this happens, you know, and we got to do this to prevent this from happening. It's almost kind of strange when you hear all wars are fought in the name of peace. So
exactly.
It just doesn't make any sense to me. Well, you know, we're going to take a little bit of a musical break, but before we do that, I thought it was very interesting. You know, when I read Julia Howe's Mother's Day proclamation, it really has a lot of religious overtones to it. And at the same time, they're calling for peace. They're calling for the women to not train their sons to kill other mothers' sons. But in 2019, there's a woman by the name of Riviera Sun who wrote the Mother's Day proclamation Code Pink. And Code Pink is an organization for women against war. So I want to read this, and then we're going to take a musical break. And the song that I'm going to play, let me just tell folks the song I'm going to play. It's called This Is My Wish, sung by Voltov. The song says what's really in both of our hearts, what we're trying to talk about, is how women can find the courage and the energy to stand up again in 2024 against all these wars. You know, and in the name of motherhood, you know, whether you have a child or not is irrelevant. That, you know, if you believe in a creator, if you believe in the great mystery, whatever, we've been given that charge. So let me read the Code Pink proclamation, then we're going to take this musical break, and then we'll come back, Harriet, and I'd like you to give your opinion on this proclamation. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay, here we go. This is the Mother's Day Proclamation 2019 by Riviera Sun. And the most important thing about this program is, I want to be very honest, the idea is to get women to stand up more. enough is enough. You know, mm-hmm. enough is enough. No more killing of our children. No more killing of women. I mean, when I see some of these mothers cry and they're dressed in clothes, it looks like they went to some, they don't even have good clothes on their back. I mean, you can see all the devastation behind them. So here we go. Mother's Day proclamation. Instead of flowers, give us peace. Instead of brunch and the wars. Let no more mothers raise their children to kill their mother, other mother's children. Give us instead the abolishment of war, the promotion of peace, and the care of people and planet. To commemorate Mother's Day without demanding these changes rings flat. For every mother approaching the beauty of the spring, there is another mother screaming under the terrors of bombs and bullets. For every mother savoring breakfast in bed, there is another mother hungry and abandoned and unhoused, stateless and fleeing from war. We, the mothers and the children of mothers, stand united against war, united for the well-being of people and planet. Go ahead, Ken.
This is my wish for the world, that peace will find its way to every boy and girl. This is the time. The time for harmony. Let love be the song that everybody sings. Fill the air with joyful noise. Ring the bells and raise your voice. Let there be peace on earth. Let there be peace on earth. Lift your light and let it shine. Let it shine, shine, shine. I hear the sweetest sound, the sound of hope to come. Together we could bring goodwill to everyone. Let it start with you. Let it start with me. Let every nation rise and sing this melody. Let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with me.
Yes, let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with me. What a powerful, powerful song. Yes. This is what we wish for you. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. And with me on the phone from New York is Dr. Harriet Fraud. Welcome back again, Harriet. So that song is very, very powerful, really. Mm. It chokes me up in a way. Can you give us a comment of what you thought in listening to the proclamation? You know, it's a modern, and what do you think they're trying to say in this proclamation?
I think they're trying to say that women, particularly mothers, but all women, because we've all been taught to mother, we've been given dolls as children, not guns, and that we need to nurture the earth as well. And I think what it's telling us is we have to get out there as women and urge peace, which I think we can do in every movement. In Ecuador, there were mass movements on March 8th across the whole world. And Ecuador's was particularly moving. It was part of a climate movement to save the Amazon. And it said, like, don't rape Mother Earth. We create life. We are not trying to create profits for companies with lumber. We are affirming life. Save the Amazon. and save our children and save life. And I think in every movement, whether it's Black Lives Matter or the climate movement or certainly the women's movement or the sexual rights movement, we have to affirm the values. We save life. We need to save motherhood and life and mothering this earth and each other.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, you know, and I mean, that's a vision that I have. I visualize women standing up. I mean, I remember when I first got into Sonoma State here in Sonoma, California, and what happened for me is they had a very strong women's movement, and I had no idea. I had no idea how oppressed I was, to be honest with you. I never thought of it. I mean, I just lived my life, and, you know, and especially all of a sudden becoming a single woman, the struggle that you have. Where do you, say, for example, someone like yourself very early on stood up with this idea? Where did you get your confidence, and how would you encourage women to stand up? I mean, what do you think takes that confidence to do that?
Well, I think it takes a couple of things. One is it takes a sense of justice, and it also takes some leadership. What inspired me was that in 1968, my biological and also psychological sister, who lived in New York, I was living in Connecticut at the time, sent me a big magazine called Notes from the First Year about women's liberation. And I thought, oh, my God, this is all true. We've got to do it here. And I reached out to other women who were inflamed by the injustice of the war in Vietnam, particularly that poster of the child burning from napalm, running naked down the street, burning, with her skin burning off.
Oh, affected, I'll never forget that one.
No, it affected people all over, and particularly women. And so we decided we need a movement. But I think it takes one person. And my sister got me excited enough to invite other people. Five people came. By the end of the month, we had 100. But we started with those five. One person who declares it and says no and tries to get together with other people, taking leadership. And also, I did have political values that were left from my father. My father was a leftist and gave us books like stories of Harriet Tubman, stories of Carver, stories of Chaim Solomon, a very important Jewish person in the American Revolution who was never covered in our books, and gave me the sense that justice is important. And I could be part of it. Also, as a child, on weekends, my father would take me and my sister to what were called hootenannies. They were concerts of blacklisted performers and artists like Paul Robeson or Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee and all sorts of Pete Seeger and people who'd lost their jobs because they were accused of being a communist. Often they weren't even really a communist. They were just a leftist or worked actively in unions. And they were labeled communist and were deported or jailed. They were jailed as trying to overthrow the government because of a left belief, even though these people who actually tried are not necessarily jailed. But, you know, he inspired me. These wonderful artists and the feeling at those concerts was so beautiful, even though I was just a little girl going there.
But you also got to see people that were standing up for what they believed.
I sure did.
And most of us didn't have that opportunity. I know my father was a union man, and so every time he went on strike, you know, in fact, a few times, it was very, very interesting. In my youth, I went on the picket lines with my father a few times, and at the same time, I was selling those little flowers for the World War I vets for my Uncle Benny. I mean, it was like there was these two worlds that I was continuing really go into. And it was interesting selling the flowers with the vets, because I even asked my uncle, I looked at him, I said, why do we have to send flowers? Why do we have to do this when all these men sacrifice so much for the war? And he said, well, this, we just have to do it. I mean, there was no, he did not answer that question. But as I got older and as I began to understand the world more, I began to see that. Well, you know, it is important for women to stand up. And I think in today's world, I think women are becoming, on one level, they're becoming a lot stronger. On the other level, I don't understand. And I guess maybe we're into that institutionalized trauma again, where you have women standing up for what's against their interest instead of for their interest. And that always is so confusing to me. So here you have a woman that is buying this idea, you know, that maybe we need a dictator or maybe we need this or that. How do you convince that woman to stand up and to start looking at what is really going on and what is reality? How do women, what kind of conversation would you think they would engage in?
Well, I think a lot of women have been taught that men are the important things, and our lives are to serve men sexually and also in terms of housework and bring up their children and take care of them emotionally when they come home upset and connect them with their friends and relatives by having them over and making those connections and doing the emotional work for men, that's our destiny. And they're afraid to look at how they've been hoodwinked, even though more and more women are standing up for ourselves. There's Time's Up, there's the Me Too and Time's Up movements, the fast food movements are overwhelmingly women. Two-thirds of fast food workers are women, and many, many mothers. The women standing up for their rights at Starbucks, the baristas are mainly women, and one of the most militant unions in the United States is the flight attendants headed by Sarah Nelson, which are overwhelmingly women. And so women are learning to stand up, and also 70% of the divorces are initiated by women, because a lot of men want to recoup their lesser jobs, since industrialists, capitalists could make more money exporting millions and millions of well-paid male jobs in manufacture, then women had to work to keep, just to make ends meet and to soothe their injured egos because they didn't have a well-paying job. Men want women to serve them even more, make them feel better, have more sex, take care of them a lot more. And women don't want what Arlie Hochschild articulately called the second shift, to go out and work a shift outside the home and then come home and do all the work at home. And they rebel. And more women are opting out of marriage altogether. And that's because they think that we don't have to serve men. But if you're brought up and it's drilled into you that your purpose in life is to be married and serve a man, not that marriage means you have to serve, there's equality in loving marriages, but they don't want, they're afraid. They're afraid to change. And yet they're threatened. There's a phenomenon that was written about in the book Deaths of Despair. And it's about how women in the South and the Midwest that used to be married for life and not expected to work, now are expected to work outside the home and can't stand it, and their marriages, Case and Deaton are the authors, Annie Case and Angus Deaton, they're the authors of Death's Despair, and they feel that they can't be supported, but they still have all the jobs to do, and they die. They die younger than people who are usually the first to die out of poverty and hopelessness, which are black people in those areas. Now, white women are dying younger because their lives are hard and confusing, and they don't know what to do. And they don't have the courage to fight back. Maybe if they had strong feminists who could reach them, they would, but they don't have the courage. Instead, they die. It's written up by Annie Case and Angus Deaton called Deaths of Despair. Well, they're from Princeton, you know, very fancy scholars, but that's a moving book.
Well, let's end with that thought, that hopefully that women will be able to stand up for themselves, stand up for their children, stand up for the future, and stand up for the end of the war to prevent this from happening to them. Well, Harriet, we've come to the end of our segment, my love. It goes by so quickly, and I want to thank you so much for this wonderful interview. A lot of ideas. Like I said, we were just getting into the proclamation, seeing what we can do, what we can suggest, and I really want to thank you for it. Why don't you give folks your website, how they can get a hold of you, and then we're going to say goodbye very quickly.
Hi. My website is harrietfrod.com. Kind of easy. H-A-R-R-I-E-T, then capital F-R-A-A, that's F-R-A-A-D.com, or go and look up Capitalism Hits Home or my radio program, which is called Interpersonal Update. Or if you want to reach me personally, hfrod@gmail.com.
Well, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart, Harriet. Thank you so much for indulging me in this wonderful conversation, and thank you for all the work that you are doing.
I thank you as well. We women really do have to get out there and lift our voices together.
Well, thank you so much, Harriet. Well, folks, that's it for our show. A special thank you for Dr. Harriet Fraud, who was on the phone with me all the way from New York, a psychoanalyst and she calls herself one of the mothers of feminism, and I really appreciate all that she has to have. You've been listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz, and all the information that we've given will be in our website, www.womenspaces.com. If you have any announcements, birthdays, anniversaries, guests, anything, give me an email at elaineb.holtz@gmail.com. I am happy to announce it. Anyway, this is Elaine B. Holtz. You've been listening to Women's Spaces. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to being with you the next time.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, March 18th, 2024.